Podcast with a K. Well, here we are for a slightly different podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley, and I am not joined by my co-hosts, Brian Terranova, nor James McLean this week in any lateral sense. They're not with me via internet, Skype, Google Hangouts. They're not talking to me directly on the phone. We've had a bit of a technical problem, for want of a more descriptive and colourful word, which has resulted in us... I'm presenting a sort of clip show. Clips being the opinions of my podcast colleagues. So we've just seen Thin Ice at the weekend, third episode of Doctor Who Series 10, or Season 36, if you prefer it in old money, in which the Doctor and his fantastic new companion Bill travel back to the 19th century and the last great Frozen River event, and attempt to explain what happened there whilst presenting us with a kind of misunderstood monster, which we've seen before in things like Killer Moon or Beast Below, which, you know, Beast Below is something that has been returned to in this episode of Doctor Who. It's been referred to twice now. Personally, I enjoyed the episode. A little bit light in places, but there's a depth in the direction, in the deftness, I should say, in the direction and the approach to things this season. There's simplicity in the dialogue. There's very little arguing. There is, although there was some conflict between the Doctor and Bill when she saw the poor boy get dragged under the ice. But basically, it continues, in my opinion, the freshness that we've seen with Doctor Who Series 10, and plenty of people I've spoken to feel the same way. Our very own Brian Terranova now tells you his thoughts on Thin Ice.
Not off to a bad start, and for me, anyway, Thin Ice follows the trend of Series 10 of good, but not great or excellent stories. But good is a good thing, so don't get me wrong, this isn't a negative point. I'm enjoying the series. I'm enjoying the characters, particularly Peter Capaldi. He's always been the shining point throughout his era, but here he's really come together in a fantastic way. And Bill is a fun companion. I like her, and I like the fact that they're using her well. I like the fact that she's not over the top. She's not trying to do things that are above a human being's capabilities. She's learning through the Doctor and her travels, and I like that. I will say that I'm a little unsure of Nardole as a companion. He's not as terrible as I thought it was going to be, but it's also an odd point. Like, having a character that is supposed to be guarding the Doctor, guarding the vault, it seems strange to have such an imbecile, and it feels almost like Moff didn't want to let go of Strax and decided to just make Nardole be the new Strax without the wanting to kill everything aspect. And it seems like it's the same humor being placed on the same character otherwise. I want to give some major credit to the writer, Sarah Dollard, because not only was the story itself enjoyable, but she had a couple moments in there that just really, they had me laughing, but they also had me thinking. The show was feeling more classic in a way, such as the scene with the psychic paper where the Doctor was infiltrating the warehouse for the fish market, basically, and the way that the Doctor was kind of getting all of the information that he could out of the head guy there, but telling him, making the guy think that he was doing something good and he was going to get himself promoted, but instead, really, you know, the Doctor was thinking, like, you keep this up, you're going to be out of here in no time. It was very clever, very good scene, very well written. Aside from that, I mean, there were plenty of good moments like that, plenty of good humor, the Doctor explaining how the situation was working while they were both wearing their diver suits, and he's explaining a lot of technical stuff, and then Pearl just turns around and says, you know, what was that? Were you saying something? Because her helmet is on. Of course, she can't hear him. The Doctor getting his sonic screwdriver back from the guy that was about to die when they were in captivity. I like that. Like, he knew this man's about to die, But, you know, I don't want to lose my sonic screwdriver because of that. What can you do? So I really enjoyed those moments. There was a lot of good stuff. I feel the CGI was a low point for me, and it really frequently has been throughout this era. Not that it was perfect in Russell's era, it just was not so hot. It looks more like a video game in many respects. So the CGI is letting some things down, but that's okay because a lot of the other stuff in the show is compensating for it. The stories are being well treated. There's not The story arc isn't overbearing on top of everything. It's not laden with a tons and tons and tons of continuity unto itself. And one other touch that I really enjoyed, which has to play off of the end of Smile, was that Smile ended with the beginning of Thin Ice in much the same way that the 60s serialized episodes would do. The two stories weren't connected. It wasn't a to be continued. It wasn't a part one, a part two. It just had that very 60s Doctor Who serialized kind of feel. And that was really neat. I really enjoyed that. I was kind of hoping that they were going to keep doing that and that we would see Bill's character kind of more short term, rather than, you know, just a one season companion. Maybe she was only with the Doctor for like a week or so, excluding episode one, where a few months had passed. But they didn't do that, obviously, and but I'd like to see them maybe connect another two episodes in a similar fashion that don't have anything. I will say that I'm concerned about the vault because I feel like it's quite obvious where it's going, and I also feel that the good things of this series so far have potential to completely go downhill depending on how they play the vault. And of course, the Double Master episode really has potential to go downhill given the history they've done there previously with Missy and the Cybermen, for example. But all in all, I'm looking forward to each new episode now. I'm looking forward to seeing Peter and Pearl expand their characters together. I'm looking forward to seeing the changes that Moff has put in place this season to make this season feel more coherent, more enjoyable, and much more like what I was hoping for when he took over the show.
So, Brian Tyrone over there telling us how he feels about Thin Ice, episode 3 of Doctor Who season 10. Thankfully, he's not the only person who's offered his thoughts. We'll be hearing from some others a little bit later. However, I wanted to find out your thoughts, dear listener. I know a few of you follow us on Facebook. As ever, I pitched a question on Facebook to gauge reaction for the episode. And there's some nice opinions on there. Guy Grist considers it surprisingly fun, and he really liked the fact that Billy's not a thrill seeker and he's shocked by death. It's a fair point. Jeff Waddle, nothing new, but the chemistry between Capaldi and Bill made this a cracking watch. He gives it 8 out of 10. I think that's probably, for me, I would probably give it a 7. It's certainly good. They are certainly very good together. It may be too early to say, and it probably is, but and it's a shame that we're not going to get Capaldi next season, from what we've been told so far. But that Capaldi and Mackie pairing is so enjoyable. I would, and forgive me if this seems like I'm going too far, but I generally would compare it favorably with Baker and Sladen. I really do think they're that good together. There's just such a good pairing, such good chemistry, as Jeff Waddle says there.
Hello, this is James Lomond for the podcast with a K. I really enjoyed Thin Ice. I thought Peter Capaldi was really on form. You can tell he's enjoying himself. That really comes across. And Pearl Mackie is wonderful as Bill. I'm a little bit low key in love with her portrayal. So really enjoying this TARDIS pair. The plot was kind of okay. The feeling I had was it wasn't really the point of the episode. It was more about developing the relationship between Bill and the Doctor and addressing the social values of another era. And so the racism issue I thought was it was fairly well addressed. I particularly like the white version of 19th century London being challenged, and the Jesus line. I guess it's a difficult issue to approach in a family show in particular, but and there may be criticisms about how they did it, but I'm certainly very glad that they didn't avoid it, and that it was addressed. I thought the monster was fine. Like I liked the whole kind of the relationship between the mini fish and the big fish. I kind of, in a slightly geeky loser way, wanted to know more about the biology of it, where it come from, how it got there. I think maybe because it was revealed very early on, it was a little disappointing. The bad guy, I prefer my Doctor Who Victorian villains to be a bit more dark and macabre, but I guess again because of the racism issue, he was portrayed in a particular way, perhaps a bit panto. So overall, yeah, I thought the episode was really good. I enjoyed it, particularly the banter between Bill and the Doctor. I think Sarah Dollard is great. She seems to really get Doctor Who, and she really gets character, so I'd love to see more of her work on the show. So that's my take. Looking forward to episode 4 and the next installment of the podcast with a K. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Scott Barclay tells us that from the title, Thin Ice, in case you've forgotten, he was expecting it to be about the Martian Swimming Club, which is possibly the best comment we've ever had on Facebook about anything. Nigel Webb, hello again Nigel, remarks that Pearl Mackey can really act them all off the stage. A great punch from the Doctor, he still got it. And the Jesus line, interesting that the Doctor should mention a religious character. Not sure if Moffat has done this before. I'm not sure either. I'm not too happy about the punching, personally speaking. I know that there's this whole punching a fascist meme going on in social media and beyond. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing to do. I think fascists and fascism should be basically confined to history and left there. However, on the other hand, I'm not sure that punching them is the right attitude to take there. Because when we allow violence, it's like free speech. If we allow violence for a particular thing that we disagree with, then someone's going to come along later and change the rules about what violence is allowed for. Where are we then? Philosophy here on the podcast with a K. Okay, we're going to move on now. And we're going to hear from James McLean, who has his own thoughts about Doctor Who Series 10's Thin Ice. I'll enjoy a nice cup of tea while I listen.
I'm struggling what to say about Thin Ice. It was a good episode. It had lovely production values. I felt the Thames and the London around it felt fresh. It felt fresh to the show, given we've spent a fair few years going back to Victorian London. It felt fresh to Victorian London generally, I suppose, and I think that was the intent. This comment about the whitewashing of the ethnicity of London, that came across well and gave it a different sort of vibrancy. Putting it on the River Thames, that again was unusual. It felt like Doctor Who was trying to do fresh things without feeling like it was trying to force them. The use of the elephant is, I know, an obvious attempt to sort of hook you in, but it felt unusual to the tone of a time travel show without dominating it, without it feeling contrived or overly constructed. As I spoke to my colleague Brian Terranova, and he pointed out, and something I quite like reflecting on his point, is how we open up this episode sort of segued into the previous episode, almost like in the Hartnell era, but there was no real connection between the two shows. There was a comment midway through about the events of the previous episode, but it wasn't a segue, as Brian has said, you know, like Utopia to Sound of Drums. It was just a very natural segue. And I wouldn't want to see that all the time, because I think it's nice to feel there's some space between episodes occasionally. I felt this worked really well. I thought Capaldi's Doctor was excellent through it. There was harkbacks to his first year, and I thought the harkbacks were very strong. They sort of embedded the sort of very pragmatic Doctor, which is what I think Capaldi is. He's a very he's not a hero's hero. He is someone who does a hero's job, and that job he does in a way that is the way it is conscripted to be. That to be a hero isn't about being the wondrous, perfect, ideologically, righteously good person. It's about a person who has to negotiate a wide range of issues or conflicts and find solutions which are the best that can be managed given the circumstances, and acknowledging that those might not be the resolutions that you want. I think he said in Series 8, I thought it was a really good line, he says, sometimes there's only bad choices. And I think that's very much about what Capaldi's about. It's a wonderful take on the Doctor that hasn't felt as fresh as this as McCoy, in the sense that it sort of takes the Doctor into a different avenue than the previous Doctors have done. He is extremely pragmatic. He is extremely aware that what he does, as a veteran of what he does, cannot be mediated by perfect outcomes. That's probably the wrong term, to be fair. What he does isn't something which carries any perfect outcomes, and that he needs to be aware of that and deal with it. It's not that he doesn't care, it's just he doesn't allow himself the indulgence of caring when the practical elements of the situation don't make that a positive. They don't produce or don't move you towards the correct outcome, to the needed outcome, the outcome of the righteous without being righteous. And I think that's a particularly powerful message, and it was played very well in this episode. The way Bill was handled was very good. I liked how Bill didn't dominate the episode. I liked the way that her success is in the episode. The companion should have a relevance to the story, but it doesn't mean they should have a relevance to the actual, to the practical outcomes of the story, in the sense that what they do must be intrinsic to the victory, to the success. They shouldn't have to be commanding the events, but their role, no matter how small, can be played big by seeing it through what they do. So Bill can spend the last act rushing around getting people off the ice, which in itself is a sort of a fairly simple job. You don't require much skill to do it particularly. You don't require much expertise. You don't require any massive amounts of ingenuity. And it's an important role to her, and through her it becomes important to the audience. I liked how she saw the green lights first, but then we find out she didn't. So we find the green lights through her. So again, it's the same thing. We're seeing the events, we're seeing the importance of these things through her, which makes her relevant, but doesn't make her more relevant in the whole scope of the actual story itself. Her role is still relatively minor. The person who is actually going to catalyze events into a different direction is going to be the Doctor, because he has 2,000 plus years of experience to be able to do these sort of things, while she hasn't. So that, I think, was a very strong and very smart way to use the companion to a point where she is important to the story. She is not just relegated to the Terence Dix mould of, or Terence Dix fear, because he never liked it, of, you know, what's going on, Doctor. She has her own important role to the story for the audience, but the writer doesn't mix that up with making her extremely important to the events of the story itself. And that is a really clever technique to write. The dialogue was really good. Dialogue was very strong. There were some very nice pieces. The Capaldi with the psychic paper and that whole scene. The early scene when they come onto the ice. I didn't think his speech was quite as amazing as everyone else did. It was still very good, but it didn't feel particularly mind-blowing. But everyone liked it, so that's fine with me. His speech about the importance of how you see yourself and how what makes humanity special. Yeah, it seemed fairly straightforward, but it was good. It wasn't mind-blowing. But generally speaking, I thought he was done very well. He seems so very much more calm this year. He seems so much more collected. I like how he doesn't have, as I've said before, that Matt Smithism anymore. He doesn't have this need to be a sort of archetype Doctor who is just crazy and manic. They seem to have realised, and maybe this has helped them structure the story, or maybe this has helped them structure the Doctor, one way or the other, but the slower pace of the stories, the more they sort of flow along in a quite old-fashioned way, really. It sort of gives him the space to do the same. He sort of, quite charmingly, he just sort of drifts through the story with you, and that's quite comforting. I think it should be a show the family can sit down and enjoy with their dinner, so they don't need to be at sort of breakneck pace the whole time. And this series doesn't seem to be trying to do that for whatever reason. I would compare it a lot as well that it feels like a Netflix show. It has that feeling, that mixture, a very confident mixture of being like a sort of 12 episode series, like a lot of sort of the sort of episodic number you might get for a Netflix series, which is exploring Doctor Who in a very sort of casual way, as if it's not trying to push the audience too much. It's as if, and this is what Stephen Moffat said before the show started again, and it was a very good point, it's as if this is, you know, the show for a new person. I could imagine coming to this show new and seeing Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, as the first time I've ever seen Doctor Who, and this character taking me through this universe of Doctor Who. And that sort of kind of works. And maybe the way it works is that if you think of it in that sort of sense, where you're not overly familiar with this character, you would expect that character to be more of a guide rather than the focus of attention. And I think that's what I like about it. The universe now is the colour. The universe is... It feels as if the show seems to recognise that the beauty and the epic and the spectacle of the ideas and the universe are really what makes Doctor Who special. And it doesn't have to be about overly focusing on the Doctor. The Doctor doesn't have to be firing off 1,000 quips a minute to try and keep the audience interested. He can take a step back and you can actually experience these different, very visceral, vibrant worlds that we've had so far. The last two episodes have been extremely contrasting, beautifully contrasting. And that seems to really work for the show. It is a show at the moment that I am really enjoying. I've not enjoyed Doctor Who like this since 2008. I mean, while I did quite enjoy the four episodes in 2009, two of them I wasn't over keen. No, that's a lie then. Two of them I wasn't over keen on. Two of them I really loved. I loved End of Time. I loved Waters of Mars. I found Planet of the Dead to be one of the most boring Doctor Who's I'd seen in a long time, and the Next Doctor was just a bit bland. So I think 2008 was the time I was really enjoying it, and 2009 had a good back end, which I was really enjoying. But after that, I've always been a bit... I felt that Moffat was overdriving ideas that had been done before and just adding his humour and excessive timey-wiminess to it, which is fun now and again, but it just didn't really felt particularly like a new show. It just felt like everything we'd done before, but faster, a little more confused, and a little more comical. So this actually feels like a new take on Doctor Who. This feels like another showrunner, not Russell T. Davis, doing a very confident and very smart take on Doctor Who. And I find that really interesting. And I'm really quite, genuinely quite sad that this is going to be the last series, if it continues like this, of Stephen Moffat and Peter Capaldi, since they seem to be just working so well on this. It's kind of good because you want to go out with a bang. You want your legacy. Your legacy is normally always remembered by your final act. So both of them will be able to leave the show and feel that they'll have a good legacy for it through this series if it continues like this. And it's good because it means that they'll have left us wanting more, hopefully. So three episodes in, really enjoyable. They killed a child, which was shocking in the sense I was expecting, as again by the tropes of Doctor Who, that he'd been teleported somewhere to some cavern or spaceship and he'd be revived later. No, he was dead. Again, these little twists and changes make all the difference. They make it feel a different show. I thought the issue of race in this was really well handled, given that it was Victorian Britain and a lot of people were sort of thinking about there being an ethnic character in there, the way that they sort of had it, as I've said before, very ethnic Britain. But they really only used that issue to sort of take the Doctor into a different place, which I thought was really good as well. It didn't sort of hinge on it, but it was used appropriately, it was used as a surprise, and it was brilliantly well handled. I suppose the last thing I should talk about is the arguments between the Doctor and Bill. Again, they were fantastic. They were really well handled, unlike the arguments in Kill the Moon at the end with Clara and the Doctor, where she sort of dominated them and sort of made him look sort of fairly submissive and helpless, which didn't seem fair and it didn't seem to really work. This seemed to be a really powerful playoff where her points were utterly justified and you could understand why the character would feel them. And likewise, he was very calm and collected in explaining, as I've said before, his pragmatic approach. And that really helped make those two characters feel like they had depth that could work in conflict without it feeling like a power play. There was another good bit I quite liked, and again it goes down to Pearl Mackie's really good reaction shot when the sonic screwdriver is released from the guy through the guy's the thug's death, and the doctor captures it. It's sort of highlighting again this sort of slightly no time to care, pragmatic, practical sense of the character. But the look on her face there was priceless, and it was a good reminder that she did not approve of it. And again, I think that was a kind of powerful way of making the scene fun and exciting, but yet at the same time reminding us that, you know, these are pretty grisly things. And as soon as the characters sort of become okay with that, if you just had her not having a reaction shot there, you start to give them a sort of sociopathic tint that this does become like a backpacking journey where people can die. It doesn't matter what they've done. People dying should be slightly shocking. It shouldn't be considered, an escapism for these characters. Bill shouldn't be going out into the universe thinking this is a load of fun. She could be thinking it's exciting. She could be thinking it's a thrill it's a thrill. But it's good to show the companion is aware of the ramifications and that these are sort of very extreme situations. And then the audiences get a feeling of that, and it gives the world, as zany as it is and as wacky as it is, more credibility. I think we've got to a point where we're getting away from the postmodernist sort of meta belief or meta angle of drama, where sort of Buffy started with this idea that if we sort of acknowledge the tropes of genre, if we acknowledge the flaws or the conceits within scripts, we can make this feel more believable because we're acknowledging it with you, that this is, you know, and we can sort of invest in it and we can all laugh together. And it seems that this season of Doctor Who is trying to avoid that, where it has done the opposite in the past. It's trying to sort of give the story and the world a little more gravitas while letting the character, the Doctor, lighten it up a little bit for the audience. And that seems to be really working. Yeah, good episode.
Okay, so thanks to James McLean. And I should add that the podcast, as originally envisaged and discussed, the actual podcast itself, which now exists only as a fleeting moment in time, perhaps floating around in the ether. Maybe the Doctor himself will be able to hear it, but very few other people will, as the recording failed between Brian and James on Sunday night. It is a crying shame, it really is. Okay, audience figures now. There's been some columnar inches attributed to the audience overnight figures for Doctor Who's third episode this season. Thin Ice had an overnight viewing figure of 3.76 million viewers, which is a share of 20.4% of the total audience. Now, other things were also down. It's a bank holiday weekend. People were on holiday. It was a nice evening. People were going out. Overnights are not what we need to worry about at this stage, although the BBC does hold a particular cachet to audience figures. We need to look at the final figures to get a good idea of where Doctor Who is going audience figure wise. I'm personally surprised that Doctor Who isn't gaining, given that it's getting good reviews and people are talking positively about Doctor Who. But this could be due to where the audience is at the moment, which appears to be beyond school. I commented on Twitter a couple of days ago that Doctor Who Series 10 is really the class spin-off that you didn't know you were going to get. If we rewind a couple of weeks to the first episode, that hit number 10 in the top 10. Now, it's a significant place, the top 10. Usually, the top 10 is full of soap operas. In this particular week, the weekend in Saturday, the 15th of April, there's 5 episodes of Coronation Street, 1 episode of Peter Kay's Car Share, 1 episode of Line of Duty, no surprises there. An episode of Broadchurch, again no surprises. And again no surprises, Britain's Got Talent. Doctor Who is still up there with the big hitters. It's above Emmerdale, it's above EastEnders. Although in fairness, EastEnders is treading water at the moment. But importantly, this is a main BBC show and it is in the top 10. As long as Doctor Who is in the top 10, we can be positive about things. It pulled in a full figure of 6.68 million for the first episode. Now, audience appreciation for Smile and the pilot was 83. For Thin Ice, it was 84. So it's in, improved in that area, which is interesting. Perhaps there's the idea of a giant sea monster passing our rocket fuel is considered to be a kind of high science concept. I'm not sure, but certainly the audience enjoyed it. So so that's that. Okay, now I was fortunate to be able to speak to our good friend and kind of podcast standby, Gareth Kavanagh, who has very kindly recorded his thoughts in a discussion with me on the phone on the bank holiday Monday. So here's Gareth talking about Thin Ice.
The first two I enjoyed. It wasn't bad Saturdays. There wasn't much to it. Mm. I mean, it was pretty lightly sketched stuff. It's all enjoyable stuff. It's a lot lighter in tone. It's a lot more Russell.
Yes, it is. It is.
Without doubt. Something extraordinary going on there. But it's enjoyable enough. The only moan I'm having is they're not really using Matt Lucas at all.
Well, some people would consider that to be a bonus.
Only the miserable. Only the miserable.
I'm torn, to be honest with you. Because I wasn't that keen on him in either because of specials, but he drew me in the last one, but I think he's been fine in the three episodes so far. I like the way he's developing.
We were chatting about this down the pub on Saturday, and and someone said, "Oh, do you think he's like the doctor's probation officer? That he's in charge?" And yeah. I thought, "Ooh, that's an interesting take. I hadn't really considered that." I think we're going to see some good material from him in time.
Have you any thoughts about what the oath might be about, or what might be in the vault?
Oh. It'll be something dark and mysterious from the Doctor's past, I suppose, won't it? The funniest rumour I've heard, which may or may not be true, but I like the idea, is that Missy is not actually the Master.
Yeah, I like that one as well.
That Missy is Susan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that Missy is like the Valeyard version of Susan.
Right.
And that's why they're bringing Sim back. To say, hang on a minute, that isn't me. That's seriously me. You've got that one wrong. Sorry. And it kind of does fit with the picture of Susan on the desk.
It does. I agree. The thing with all that is that they've already kind of retro-canonized her in one of the novelizations by one of the big-name authors, whose name escapes me at the moment. I'll just put it in here in the edit. In which, which is the Third Doctor and Delgado. Era story.
They'll ignore that. They'll ignore that.
Yeah, they probably will. But the fact that they went to the effort of including someone with her description in the text, probably just before it went to print, only to retcon it. I like the idea. I'm pretty sure I thought of it, but I'm no doubt that other people thought of it as well.
Well, I think it's a fun theory, and it would kind of fit. So, let's see.
It still upset a lot of people as well.
Well, that's all part of the fun. but if you look at it logically, she's another Time Lord that's out there.
She is the one that he abandoned.
She is the one he abandoned. Susan has been name-dropped an awful lot, if I think back over the last few years.
Yeah.
And especially if the rumours are true of Bradley coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, First Doctor, because he always was a bit guilty over little Susan as well.
Yeah.
And abandoning her. So it does kind of fit thematically. I mean, it would be quite a jump for people who just sort of casually tune in every Saturday. So that's going to be a fun one to explain. Here's a character we last saw, excluding the Five Doctors back in 1964. But stay with this kid, it's the Doctor's granddaughter.
Well, there's a glimpse of her in the Time of the Doctor, isn't there? But other than that, yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, there's something else I want to ask you before you go. Yeah. And that is 12 years since the show returned. and no child has died on screen before Saturday night.
Oh, I missed all that. You went a bit wibbly.
It's 12 years since Doctor Who has been back on TV, and it's been a very clear policy that children don't die.
Yes.
You don't see a child die. And then on Saturday night...
Oh, yeah, well, I suppose, but... No, not true. I mean, you know, they were quite happy for that little kid to become a toddler thing, weren't they?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, little blonde lad ended up being the sort of, you know, I suppose he's not dead as such, but I can't imagine it's much fun whizzing around in a little...
Well, I don't know, if you're a kid, that probably is quite a lot of fun, actually.
Well, I suppose it depends how bothered you are about having the rest of your body. if you're happy to just be a head in a globe, I suppose it's all right. Well, I suppose so. I wasn't aware that that was a sort of one of the...
I saw it somewhere, and I wasn't 100% convinced, but I couldn't think of an enormous amount of similar occasions, so I was beginning to think that, maybe that is a thing.
They made a big thing about how many kids were on Gallifrey when you destroyed it, Doctor.
True, but he didn't destroy it, did he?
No, but he thought he had.
But he thought he had.
And there's lots of other places he's blown up where he's not too bothered about the kids. And I suppose they sort of dealt with that when she said, how many people have you killed? Some of that was a little bit sort of over the top, I thought. You know, it was almost like hammering it home just a touch. You know, if I was the Doctor, I'd have gone, right, well, obviously this travelling in time isn't for you, love, so I'll take you back and you can get back on my serving trips. Kind regards. So, yeah, I don't know. I never heard of this Never Kill Kids. I mean, I suppose it didn't come up very often, but there must be... The chocolate thing jumps to mind as sort of kids being killed.
I really can't think of any others. There's obviously the bit with the Cyberman in Army of Ghosts and that towards the end, but you don't see anything. You just see the Cyberman in the house. What do you think of the pairing, anyway, in the TARDIS?
It's a good energy. They've gone back to that sort of, I suppose, you know, Eliza Doolittle and Professor Higgins that worked so well with the Doctor Leela.
It's
brought out a softer side in Capaldi. It's a good performance, and I think Pearl is very good. I think you can see that she's being perhaps written differently to some of the other companions, and her theatre background, it clearly shows. So I think she's doing well with the material to be written for her, but she's doing a good job. So I like it, but I would like to see a bit more Matt Lucas as well.
Okay. Right. Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Matt.
So a big thanks to Gareth Cavanagh, co-editor, producer, publisher of the excellent Vwarp Vwarp fanzine, which is still available. So if you haven't got your copy already, head over to vwarpvwarp.co.uk, place an order. You may be lucky enough to get something quite unusual, or you might just get the otherwise extraordinary standard issue. Now, we're going to come back to Thin Ice in a moment, but it's worth mentioning... our previous guest, Manu Interaimi of Star Trek Voyager fame, his Kickstarter for the circuit has launched. And from what I understand, it's done quite well, with something in the region of $50,000 was required. 61,922 was pledged on Kickstarter.com with 595 backers, and there is still 21 days to go. This was all or nothing. It would only be funded if it reached its goal. It's reached the goal, so this is fantastic. The circuit is going ahead. So, head over to Kickstarter.com. You'll find the link in the show notes if you want to back that, because the more that they've got for that, the better the production is going to be. The $50,000 was a minimum in many ways. So that's great. It's going to happen. The circuit is going to happen. So there's something to look forward to, and hopefully we can get Manu back on the podcast with a K, or on Beyond Cast Derbys, I should say. With regards to that, okay. So Thin Ice, the vault. Someone was knocking, weren't they? And the obvious answer is clearly the Master, because there's some knocking going on. But was it four knocks? Was it? Or was it? Was it three knocks? Was it four knocks? Some people say it's three. Some people say it's four. Some people say that the incidental music suggests the Master. Other people don't. There is a lot going on with Master Rumours and Missy Rumours as well, which we may talk about in next week's podcast with a K. Next week's episode of Doctor Who is, appropriately enough, called Knock Knock. And it guest stars David Suchet. And we've heard recently that Samantha Spiro is also a guest star in that episode. We're going to play out this week's podcast with K with the trailer from Knock Knock. And I will be back next week, hopefully, along with Brian or James or maybe even Gareth. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully we can get something recorded with all of us in a room, or in a virtual room at least, all talking together. But until then, it's goodbye from the podcast with a K. Here's Knock Knock.
Are you looking for somewhere to live?
That's your house?
Sharing, yeah. Six of us.
How do you get into the tower?
You don't.
What's that noise?
There's some massive mystery going on.
See you in the morning.
The house is eating people.
This is a Beyond Castor Bruce podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastorBruce.com.